Happy Easter, friends. Christ is risen, and we welcome you to this garden. We welcome you to this garden with our friends Mary, Peter, and the one whom Jesus loved. We did talk about Simon Peter on Thursday. Yep. Exactly. You did do that reading. Thank you, Charlie. That's a good memory. I'll wash your feet. The last couple of days have been very, very weighty. Even devastatingly beautiful. But as difficult as Friday was for us, it was indeed a little easier to swallow because we knew that Easter was coming. We today don't have to sit wondering if what Jesus said was actually true, that he would rise again, because we live on the other side of the resurrection. We as Christians are Easter people, people of the resurrection, who proclaim hope in Jesus when the world around us seems to be falling apart. To proclaim that in the worst of circumstances, there is still opportunity for new life. During the past 7 weeks, if you have been with us during the season of Lent, we have joined Jesus and his followers to Jerusalem for the annual celebration of Passover. We actually, instead of focusing a bit on Jesus' ministry, we zoomed in very, very close to Holy Week and the events that led up to his crucifixion. And these moments were both very public and also very, very intimate, especially as we got closer. And on Thursday, just a couple of days ago, like Charlie said, we sat downstairs in the black box along this very, very long table so that we could live into the story of the Last Supper together. On Friday, we observed the events of the not-so-great Good Friday, as we call it. I feel like we should rename that, because that's when Jesus endured seemingly endless torture and a brutal death on a cross, leaving us in our grief and our sorrow. And yesterday, we just stopped. Or we kept ourselves busy. We tried everything we could to put out of our mind the horrors that we had witnessed the day before, but that was a useless endeavor, it turns out. And today's reading picks up early in the morning on the third day, before the sun had even risen. Jesus' people were trying to get their bearings for whatever was to come next. Each gospel narrative tells a different perspective of the resurrection. And today we are letting the Gospel of John guide us, bearing witness to three folks' experience on this third day. Mary Magdalene, one of Jesus' disciples and closest friends, a woman whom he had delivered from spiritual oppression years earlier. She was there at the foot of the cross, bearing witness. And then, two other disciples and Jesus' closest friends, Peter, and he who I self-identified as the one Jesus loved, who most believe was John, the writer of the gospel. So we're going to zoom in one more time to this scene and see what we might find. Do you guys mind bringing up the picture? Here you go. We find these three beloveds right in the middle of their grief. And grief is this very, very interesting experience, isn't it? It happens in real time. So while everyone else is functioning in business as usual, those of us in grief, particularly those in the days closest to our loss, are consumed by our grief. We can't focus on, we can't not focus on the one that we love. That's why our jobs often give us bereavement leave, because they know that we would be unable to focus on the task at hand. Those early days are some of the hardest, because everything that we do makes us think of that person. And if the relationship is close enough, we feel pretty lost because they often helped walk the hard times with us. That's one of the reasons we go to their closets first. We grab their clothes and we smell them. That's why we go and sit in the chair that they sat in, or listen to a voicemail that they had left for us. Because even if they aren't there anymore, there are traces of them left behind that allow us to be with them when we don't feel ready to let go of them entirely. Grief is exhausting. It's difficult and messy and unpredictable. There is no straight line in grief, and there is no right or wrong way to go through it. It's a personal journey, and whatever that looks like for each of us is the only way that we can move through the painful work of grief. So deep in grief, that is where we find our sister and brothers on this Easter morning. Scared, angry, still trying to grapple with the events that had occurred just days before. First, we find Mary Magdalene before the sun rises, having gone to the tomb. And we don't know why she was going. Why do we do the things that we do when we're grieving? But when she got to the tomb, she saw that the stone that had enclosed his tomb was rolled away. And startled, she ran to tell some of the others. Peter and the one whom Jesus loved ran to check out the scene for themselves, again, racing. It's one of my favorite texts because Peter and the one Jesus loved, they raced to the tomb, and the one who Jesus loved got there first. But don't forget, he got there first, and then Peter, yeah, it's very, very funny. So they investigate, and they find the things she said to be true, and they return to where they came from, where they were staying. But Mary stays, and she weeps. Because from her perspective, not only had Jesus died, now someone had stolen his body. She doesn't, in her grief, think that he had risen. Her mind didn't go to resurrection or that Jesus had power over death. She just believed that his body was stolen, an additional dagger into her heart that was already so broken. But then she looks back in the tomb and she sees two angels who talk with her and she explains to them why she's crying. Then Jesus himself appears to her. I said right in front of her, but it's behind her, apparently. And she looks up and she does not recognize him. Now, can you imagine not recognizing your loved one who had passed like 2 days before? That's what grief does to us. She thinks he's the gardener, or maybe even the person who had moved her loved one. Because sometimes our grief takes us out of reality. Sometimes our grief completely obscures the obvious. Jesus also asks her why she is crying, and she asks him in desperation to just tell her where his body is, that she would take care of him if he would just tell her where he had taken them. Can you go to the next slide? It wasn't until he spoke her name, until she heard his voice speak the familiar to her, until something she could not mistake, something personal, something that brought her back to the time before the loss, could she recognize him. And immediately she knew. She knew in that deep place within her, in her gut, who this man was. Mary has one of those moments in her grief where she is actually back with the dead, but actually really was. Not just back with him because of his scent, not just back because she saw the chair he sat in, but literally with her loved one. Jesus spoke to her in the place that she needed him to speak. Jesus knew Mary very intimately. And he spoke. He made his return to her very, very personal. He didn't just come in and announce, "Attention, I, your Lord and Savior, have returned and am back from the dead." No, he speaks her name, that name by which she knows herself best. And suddenly the lights come on. His first appearance in the resurrection was a personal one, a revealing of himself. And this is a theme at the end of John's gospel. Every resurrection appearance is very, very personal. Folks need to see him for themselves. Here in our story, it's not just Mary, but it's also Peter and John. They don't believe it until they actually go to the tomb and they see it themselves. Later that day, it's not until the rest of the disciples see him that they believe. And a week later, it breaks my heart when I think about this. A week later, he appears to Thomas because he missed him the first time. He too needed to see him to believe, and Jesus showed him his hands and his side and even offered for him to touch him. But that was all that Thomas needed. Friends, today is such a beautiful day, the highest holy day of our faith. But if you have a hard time wrapping your mind around the resurrection like those first disciples, know you are not alone. We today don't have the luxury of being face to face with Jesus. And it was still hard for those who did. But the good news of the resurrection is personal. It is for you, it is for me, and Jesus knows each one of us by name and wants to bring new life to each and every one of us. Today's good news is all about Jesus overcoming death and trauma and pain and suffering. And it is good news that is born over and over and over again. Can you go to the next slide? So Jesus tells her to go and tell them that Jesus is ascending and going back up to the Lord. And she goes back and she's like, "I saw him." Doesn't even follow the directions. But look at the joy. She couldn't help herself. And I love that. I love that. So I wonder what is stirring up within you. Where do you see yourself in this scene? Here are a couple ways to consider that question, and then I'm going to actually invite you to respond. How do you see a resurrection in the here and now, or even resurrection on the way? Is it incredibly difficult for you? Or can you see these things with ease? What would it look like for Jesus to call your name today, to speak tenderly into your heart about all the places you thought were dead? Me too. What does it look like to believe that God is making all things new, here and now, even while we wait for the fullness of that newness? What is it that you sense? Oh, for a word of you who've never been here before, these are actual questions and we invite people to talk back. Okay? Just, this is actual questions and you are super welcome to just yell them out.